Welcome to the Deep Sexy Play podcast. I'm your host, EJ Love, and this is my uncensored space designed to stimulate your mind and give you full permission to explore your curiosities and express your deepest sexual desires. Thanks for tuning in. Now let's get turned on. So, following on from our last episode, we spoke about what is conscious sexuality. And on this episode, we're going to be talking about what actually is a conscious sexuality experience, which the acronym is CSE. So I'm here with the amazing Anna again, and we were just having a nice little chat before about brothels and brothels not being conscious. And I think that's kind of where all of this started, really. So I'd love you to just speak about that, and then we'll get into what is a CSE.
Yay. I'm pretty excited to be talking about this. So as you know, I've been involved in the commercial adult industry for more than 40 years. I did start my career as an escort, and I have owned probably 8 or 9 brothels, and I still currently own one. And a lot of people ask me, gee, brothels are really not where conscious sexuality happens. How do you hold space for both of them? Is that not a compromise of what you believe in? And to me, that's precisely the point. I think that brothels often, though not always, but a lot of the interactions in brothels are definitely not conscious. And that has definitely increased as porn's become more and more mainstream, because people often come into brothels and they actually want a repeat of what they've seen in porn. That has gone off the scale really after COVID, because I guess people watched a lot more porn over COVID in their search for connection. To me, that's the point. The adult industry and that healing goddess is still held within every single sex worker. There is no doubt about that. They still carry that healing, but for that to come back into the adult industry, for us to get it back, it needs to come within. It needs to come from within our industry. And it needs to come gently when people are ready, because people come to these kind of things when they're ready. So if I went into my mainstream brothel and said, from today, we're only going to sell conscious experiences, we would actually lose the ability to get that message to a lot of people by introducing it to them gently, or having that available for them to explore or look into when they're ready. So instead, what I've tried to do is create different experiences or different things that people can do around conscious to actually, I guess, expose them to that concept. Keeping in mind that particularly a lot of young men, they've now been watching porn since they were 10, and now they're adult men experiencing their sexuality perhaps in a brothel. This is a very new concept for them. And so we need to do it gently. We need to do it gently. But that's precisely where my passion for this has come from wanting to reintroduce that goddess healer back into the mainstream adult industry gently.
Yes, absolutely. And I think I spoke on another episode where I talked about my journey into becoming a tantric escort, how I started doing things like tantric massage that were what people could get their head around. And then I started adding in other rituals and other practices and other things that I would now call a conscious sexuality experience, but I didn't have that language back then. So this is what we're going to talk about on this episode, is really what are the type of conscious sexuality experiences that you can have. And what is a conscious sexuality experience, and how it is different from, you know, just going to see a sex worker or Maybe even a kink experience that might be not so. So having a kink experience, it might not be so conscious. Actually, touching on that, I went to a party last week, and I went to a, actually we both went to a kink party recently, and I actually ended up leaving early because there wasn't consciousness. There was quite a bit of drinking, and I did a video on my Instagram the next day. Because I was just so passionate about the lack of embodiment and how important this is, and how I could see people that were quite disconnected or disassociated. And I just felt like how important to bring that consciousness and embodiment into the kink experiences and how powerful that can be. So, oh man, it really touched me, and it really made me passionate, and it made me, and the amount of response that I got from social media, I had so many, particularly women, reaching out to me and resonating, going, oh my God, I feel this, like this is what I've been exploring, like all these things. And I was like, wow, I did not expect that response. And I really, when I shared, I was quite in my body, and I was really deeply feeling, and I even cried, and I was like, just really feeling how important this work is. And I just wanted people to feel that, and they did. And I'm like, well, this is the point. Like, this is the depth that I want people to feel in their experiences. And that's what gets to happen when we have a conscious sexuality experience. So let's actually start with CSE and why the acronym CSE. Do you want to speak to that, Anna?
Yeah, yay. So in mainstream brothels, we have all sorts of different experiences, and we have some main ones. So probably the most popular one is what we call the girlfriend experience, and that is acronymed as the GFE. So you can come in and you can ask to have a girlfriend experience, which is a more intimate experience that involves kissing and that kind of thing. The other very popular one is PSE. So that stands for the porn star experience. So I guess that's where people come in and actually ask for some of the things they've seen in porn. That's actually not as bad as people coming in and presuming that they get a porn star experience as just part of the norm. So at least that gives a chance for people to negotiate what PSC may actually mean amongst consenting adults. So to be, I guess, consistent with the different kind of experiences you can have within the adult industry, we decided that adding a conscious sexuality experience, so a CSE, would be, I guess, a fantastic addition to an establishment menu.
Yeah, love that. So really, if you go to a, you know, an escort directory website, or perhaps you go to a parlor, a brothel, like you're going to see on there that you can have a GFE or a PSE. And if you want to have that type of experience. And so that's quite well known in the industry, those acronyms. And what our vision is that CSE becomes just as well known as an offering. So that people know that they can go to a sex worker and they can ask for a CSE experience. And when I say sex worker, a CSE doesn't necessarily mean full service. So I want to be very clear about that, because a lot of the things that are on offer don't necessarily offer that. And it really comes down to the person that is offering it, what they want to offer. There's so much that can be done without offering a full service. So full service being penetrative sex. That can be done outside of that, and that's what we want to offer in a conscious sexuality experience, is that really it comes down to the woman deciding what is in her authenticity, what her body is saying yes to, and what she desires to offer, essentially. And what we've created is a series of different practices and rituals that come under this banner of CSE, which is what we teach and train people in our conscious sexuality trainings, whether that be to become a practitioner and offer that, or whether it to be just for their own personal experience to learn and be able to bring it into their own sexual intimacy. So the vision is one day I see that I'll be able to go to an escort directory and see a lot of women and perhaps men at some point. We've there might be a future down the track thing that we have talked about, but for now we're only training women, although we are offering a mixed gender training that's not a practitioner training at this stage as well. So is that I will be able to go to that and I'll be able to see who, I'll be able to perhaps type in CSE and see who offers that. And like you said at the start, Anna, you know, it starts with a few and then many, and then the more women that start doing this, the more it becomes well known. And I remember when I first started out and I was offering all these different practices and rituals, and I had them under the banner of Tantra and Tantric, is that I felt like I was really the only one. Like I would look at the directories and I'd be like, maybe there'd be one or you know, two other women, but usually they'd only be offering like tantric massage, whereas I'd created all these other practices and rituals, and literally, unless that man came to me, they couldn't actually get it anywhere else because I'd created it. I'd created these rituals and practices, and I'd experimented and played with things and find out what worked and didn't. And then when I started teaching other women, people said to me, but you've got this like niche, like why would you want to teach other people? Because, you know, you're niche now, and that's a really good advantage to have. Like, you know, people have to come to you to get this experience. And I said, because the more people that are doing it and offering it, the more well known it becomes, and it becomes a thing. Like, oh, I want to go have that experience. Where do I find someone that has that experience? And so I had this vision. I think it was back in 2016. I was working with a mentor, and I was like, this is going to revolutionize the sex industry. Like, what if all escorts had this training, or like they offered conscious sexuality experiences? I didn't use that language. I think it was like tantric and sacred sexuality was the terms I was using. Like, imagine that. That would revolutionize the sex industry. And now, like, really, I see it would revolutionize the whole world, especially after having conversations with you and about, you know, how impactful the changes in the sex industry have been to actually change how we explore and experience sexuality in the world.
I just really wanted to speak to what you said about it doesn't need an experience doesn't necessarily include penetrative sex. I think that's just really important because that really gives people a choice in what they're offering within a service. And for me, also, once again, same as you, without having that knowledge of the words or the terms of conscious sexuality experience, I really started offering those services by default when HIV really started to be a big thing, and it really affected the adult industry at that time. People were really frightened to have full service sex. So I got really creative in the services that I was offering to that didn't involve any sort of penetration at all. And I got really, really busy. And down the track, I kept offering those services. Once again, they didn't even have a name then. And in the 80s, I didn't really even have access to the word Tantra or any of those things. I just knew I was able to offer really fantastic services that were, for want of a better word in that space and time, HIV friendly. But when everyone went back to, well, when condoms started being used and full service was back on the menu, I started to be known as the girl in the brothel that never had sex, because I just kept using those kind of experiences that were so much nicer on my body. They were so much more enjoyable for me. I could do so many more bookings in a day or a week because I was doing them with a full heart without damaging my body. My love for myself and my love for my clients just increased tenfold because I wasn't doing anything I didn't want to do. And everyone else in the brothel was kind of going, what on earth are you doing? And what I was doing was actually not having penetrative sex. I didn't have the words around it then. This is a very long time ago. This is, in the 80s. But, even then, there was an instant connection if you're offering a heartfelt service. And that really, for me, and over time, trumped maybe a quick friction-based penetrative service. And that was such a good lesson for me. And it happened then, I guess, because of necessity. But it just really shows that people think they want a certain kind of service. They think they do because they've watched porn, or they think that's just what sex should be. The sex workers, they get to be educators. They actually get to take their customers by the hand and say, "Hey, you think you want this, but I'm going to show you something far better." And that's just an incredibly empowering experience for all participants. So, look, I just get so excited thinking about what that will mean for sex workers, what that will mean for customers, and what that will mean for the whole world.
Yeah, and I really feel like one of the things that really well, the reason that we called it an experience is because that's what it is. It's an experience that creates learning and growth and transformation and healing. That's what the experience really encompasses, I feel. And then it's not just like a one-time thing and on your way. It's like oh, I'm changed by this in some way. There's something that's happened in my body, an experience that I've felt. There's a new awareness that I have around my sexuality. This, yeah, I'm walking away with something being changed for me. And the amount of times I've had clients that have said that that was like nothing they've ever experienced, or they see sexuality in a whole new way. Like they can't go back to the old way of doing things, like all this kind of stuff. It's like, yeah, like when you have this, it is like really what I believe how sex should be, how sexuality should be.
Somewhere along the way, EJ, we lost the connection between our sexual energy and our spiritual energy, and that remembering that this is our life force energy. It creates life. It is so powerful. And in a lot of ways, in modern world, we've almost trivialized that. We've made it into something, just trivial. You can turn on porn anywhere, and we've really made sexuality really not what it is, and we've lost it. And when people re-find that connection that is sitting there right inside of them, it changes their life, not just around their sexuality, but in how they live every moment of their life, how they have relationships, how they create wealth, how they exist at work, how they parent. It flows into everything. That's just magic. And it's a magic that, a couple of thousand years BC was mainstream. It was magic that we already knew, and we lost it. But it's still held there. We still, our bodies still remember. So we're actually helping people to re-tap into their old memories. And because it touches a part, oh, I always knew that. I just didn't know. That's a real coming back to self and a real homecoming for people. It often fills in all those gaps in life when you're just walking around feeling like you're missing something or something's not quite there. And people often fill up those gaps with addiction and porn and all sorts of things. But that's the missing bit, that connection to our spirituality and a connection back to ourselves. And through sexual energy and through this work, we can help people find a way back to that. And that's, look, same as you, something I get quite emotional about. It's really exciting. I'm creating the world that I want my kids to grow up and live in.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, and I think the biggest point you make there is the connection between our sexuality and our spirituality. And for me, that's when things started to really change for me, was when I went through that sexual awakening, and I went through my spiritual awakening first. And I was working it as an escort at the time. And I had that part of me that was doing the sexuality work, and this part of me that was doing spiritual work, because I was doing things like Reiki and really like, oh, I feel like these two parts of me are not gelling. They're not like, how do I, the what the escort work that I'm doing is actually, I feel like it's going against my spirituality. And it wasn't until I had my first tantric massage that I was like, oh, this is, these things go together. And that's when I really had my sexual awakening, as I started on my own sexual healing journey and was like, okay, this is what I'm here to do for clients. And that's when I just started learning as much as I could and going to doing trainings, learning about sacred sexuality and conscious sexuality and tantra and all the things, and just applying it to my sessions, which then has really effectively created all these rituals and practices that I now have passed on to others to be able to do. And it's been incredible to be able to create that ripple effect as well. And, you know, in alignment with the work that you do, that's coming together, like it's so complementary. So that's one of the biggest things. And for those who haven't listened to the first What is Conscious Sexuality episode, I'll go back and look at that, because one of the biggest things we talked about was embodiment. And the body is the home of the soul. So really, that's where I really think a big piece is that we're working consciously with our sexual energy, bringing ourselves into our body, connecting with our spiritual selves, and bringing that into our experiences and into our intimate experiences. And a lot of the work of someone offering a conscious sexuality experience is helping the person get into their body, you know, to tap into their sexual energy, to be connected to themselves, to get out of that goal or performance base, to get out of the stories in the mind that they're trying to please or prove or disassociate, and getting them into their bodies, into the moment, to really feel what's there and to feel the sensations, to feel the pleasure that might be underneath the sensation or with the sensation. And creating a framework and a structure that creates safety, because that is really the foundational piece, is safety. We have to have safety. And I know that when I look back on my sexual experiences before my sexual, my conscious sexuality awakening, I definitely didn't feel safe. And my way to feel safe was actually to disassociate from the body, get in my head, and just perform and to give to and please men, when really I wasn't really in my body and being in service to men's desires instead of really like coming into my own body and into my own pleasure. So that's the really, I think the foundational piece is creating safety through boundaries and consent, through conversations around boundaries and consent, creating safety through having someone be regulated in their nervous system. And we use the breath to do that. We use the senses to do that. We support our client or our partner to, you know, to be able to drop in and feel their bodies and feel that their nervous systems are regulated, so they're not coming in from a place of being dysregulated, and often that's going to take us away, like disassociate us from our bodies.
And I think feeding into that, one of the really foundational pieces that we're teaching in the CSE training, first up, day one, we teach the women in the group about what it is to be trauma informed. Because once people sink into their bodies, sometimes for the first time in their life, it's quite normal to find trauma stored in your body. And it Trauma can be around the guilt or the shame that we carry. For women who are sex workers, there's lots of stored guilt and shame sitting in their bodies about the work that they do. So, and for clients, there's often a lot of guilt and shame. So one of the first things we teach in CSE is how to be trauma-informed, how to assist if someone starts to experience some trauma in session. And from our experiences, I can see that that's been so empowering for the women to, okay, if someone is having some sort of response, I'm here to support them through that. I have the skills to be able to hold their hand and make that okay, possibly refer them to someone else. But I have those skills rather than, oh my God, what's happening? Maybe both of us will end up disembodied after that experience because their trauma's bounced off my trauma and neither of us know what to do with that. So that's just become even worse. So instead, we're actually talking to trauma where we're talking around what it is to be trauma-informed. And I think that's a really key part of the training that we're offering.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really extremely essential. And I look back before I had this awareness, how I would have dealt with things so differently. And the way that men have responded. I mean, just to give an example, I had a client once who, when I did touch his penis, he went into a trauma response. And he felt really disconnected, dissociated, didn't even know what was going on. Like, just there was like, he didn't really know what he was experiencing. And if I knew then what I know now, probably would have dealt with it quite differently. I did complete the session there and I did support him to feel safe, but I didn't really know what to do. I was like, oh my God, what do I do? Like, and then I felt like, oh, he hasn't got what he needed out of the session. Like I was in like a bit of story about things. And so I mean, this was many years ago. So now being trauma aware and trauma informed is much more prevalent. And we are speaking about it back then. I mean, no one really talked about it. So I think it's great that this is happening now and we're having conversations about it. And some of the things we talk about is how to recognize when a client is going into a trauma response or is becoming dysregulated, so we can support our client to become more regulated and feel safe so that they don't go into a full-on response. So we're catching it before they go there. But then what happens if that does happen? Because it can happen. And actually, I've been having a conversation with someone that's been wanting to learn Lingam massage and then perhaps wanting to go teach Lingam massage. And I said to her, there's a lot of things to consider with this because, yes, there's a lot of techniques that you can do. But, you might have someone that might get triggered at some point by a certain technique or a certain thing, or that, and they might go into a freeze response. They might not be able to breathe. They might, shut down, or they might get agitated and they might not be able to speak up for that. Yeah. And or they might feel shame and guilt, or they might want to go into this has happened with a lot of men. When I used to give Lingam massages, they would often go out to touch me and like want to put their hand on my body. And often that's because they have shame around receiving. Yeah, or they think they need to touch to get aroused. They think they need to be aroused when receiving a massage. And like there's shame, oh my God, if I'm not aroused, there's something wrong with me. Yeah, so there's all these pieces that we need to consider that can happen. And this is stuff that I've just learned from giving thousands of Lingam massages that I've learned from all the noticing how all the different men responded. And their ability to receive and having to guide them into receiving and noticing what might come in their body. And sometimes it might be something, a different part of the body that starts to feel like I had one person that felt tension in his head when receiving. And we realized that there was sadness underneath that tension. And the tension, when he was allowed to name the sadness, he could actually bring those tears up, and then I could hold him in that and to feel what he needed to feel. Yeah. So,
So beautiful.
Yeah, so like in our training, this is the things we teach is like how to, when these things do happen, is like it's also about helping the clients have more awareness of their own bodies as well, and noticing what they're feeling, and bringing them into that noticing.
And I think and that is such a big difference between for in a an establishment, maybe a standard service and a CSE service, is the time. The time and the space and the not rush to notice those things and to have an experience, to feel into your body, to feel that connection, for the practitioner to be able to take that time to notice changes in someone's body that might mean that they're becoming triggered, and having a service that is relaxed without an end goal in place, without, we have to get from here to here in 20 minutes done. Where the CSE is not like that. There's no goal. There, from the moment it starts, it is an exploration. It is an experience. It doesn't have necessarily an end goal. Every second of it is an experience to be valued and nurtured. And so that space to notice and to feel is very much specific to a CSE experience.
Yeah, I feel there's a real slowness around it, which what I've always noticed is that the slower that we go, the more that we can feel. Whenever we're rushing something or we're trying to get to a goal, we lose the capacity to really feel, to really drop in, to really feel like what's actually here in the body, what is actually wanting to be felt, what's wanting to be expressed. And we live in a society that puts a lot of pressure on fastness and getting shit done and achieving and being goal orientated. And really, a CSE is about letting go of all of that and being able to really be in the moment. And I felt in my experience, what I've seen is a lot of men are actually longing for that. They want that, and they want to fully relax. They want to fully just release stress, and they want to not think about anything. They want to be taken care of and not have to have any goal.
And our conditioning around sex is so much that orgasm is so important. And for a lot of intimate sexual relating, people have actually already had their orgasm and finished before they've actually even started to feel. In fact, the orgasm can actually almost be a protective thing that they've created within themselves to stop them feeling. So they'll have that quick orgasm. Great, I got a really good hormonal release, and now I'm going to go to sleep. And in that experience, they've never once sunk into their body and experienced anything at all. And the opportunity is then over. So getting rid of that goal, just opens so much spaciousness for a journey and exploration, which, man, that's just exciting.
Yeah, and look, I can attest to this because I've had this experience of using clitoral orgasm to avoid feeling my deeper emotions. I would notice that sometimes I'd start to actually disassociate, or I'd start to feel some kind of pain, and then I'd use stimulating my clitoris to avoid feeling whatever was there. Or I might feel some numbness, and so I'd start doing that, and then I could quickly have an orgasm, and then I don't have to feel what actually is there that wants to be felt, and really just being with that. And I talk about titration quite a bit, and what I can see now, like, is how important it is to titrate. So titration is when we can really, if things are getting intense or things are feeling like, oh my God, I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed, or I'm feeling starting to get a bit dysregulated, then we can take a moment to pause to check in with our bodies and listen to what's going on, and then edge back in. Yeah, we can regulate ourselves in a moment, maybe take some, if we're with someone, we might take some breaths together and feel like, okay, I feel good to go back in, or maybe there's something that needs to be felt or expressed here. and then go back into it. And then, so we're edging a little bit, and then we might take a break, and then we edge a little bit more, and then we take a break and we edge a little bit more. And that might not ha that might happen have open that might happen over a series of sessions. Yeah. And we can work with that as well, like consciously working with those things. So like if someone does have a struggle around orgasm, or maybe like, so I call it the, I felt like I had the woman's version of premature ejaculation. I had premature clitoral orgasms. And with the next partner, I would clitoral orgasm really fast. And I was like, without even touching my clitoris, I was like, what is going on? And I could see that diving deeper into it, I have a fear of sexual intimacy and whatever was coming from that, and whatever was underneath that, which can often be some shame. I've got a little kid in here that is meowing at me. So cute. Oh my God. So if I put him in the laundry though, he'll probably he'll probably meow more. So if you hear little meowings, it's very, very cute. You might not be able to hear anything, but he's looking up at me right now. It's so cute. Oh, that face. Okay. So yeah, it was like you could work with that consciously to be like, okay, setting some intentions to look at, okay, let's practice edging into this feeling that's here. So, might be getting close to the orgasm, and then let's take a moment and check in with actually what is here that wants to be felt and expressed. What is the sensation? What is the emotion? How does it want to be expressed? So,
And that, that opening up completely is quite scary. That's a lot. And we've put a lot during the course of a lifetime, we've put a lot to protect ourselves from that fear of opening up and being fully, completely open and vulnerable. But that's where the sexual connection is. That's where the magic is. And just like, as we spoke, we've all got fear of sexual intimacy and trauma connected in our body, but it's because that sexual energy is so powerful that is the site sometimes of our greatest traumas, but also when we get past that, is the site of our greatest growth, our greatest pleasure, and our greatest connection. And that's what we're trying to get people to. Something that once upon a time was just a normal day-to-day knowledge of daily life. And so just getting us back to that is exciting. But it's interesting how our conditioning has put all sorts of barriers around that to stop us getting, because sometimes feeling into your body and feeling into your feelings is actually incredibly emotionally painful. And that we have to be prepared to sit in that pain to get to what's at the other side. So sometimes there's a lot of protective stuff in the way, but it's such an incredible great gift to be able to take, first of all, yourself and then other people through that experience and out to the other side.
Yeah, love this.
Mm.
And that's the thing that I've seen a lot is that, people wanting to experience more pleasure, and sometimes we have to feel the pain to, is, emotionally, usually the emotional pain that is protecting us from actually feeling the pleasure. And there might be shame, guilt, could be grief, anger, frustration. There's so many pieces that can come up, and sadness, and that is blocking us from really feeling and receiving pleasure that is actually available to us. So yeah, I've had many sessions, both for myself and offering this work, having these big emotions come up, and then feeling once those emotions have been released, wow, the amount of pleasure that be has become possible. Like that is in the body, and then all these orgasms that I didn't even know that I could have that have become possible, that like wow. And it was like not even trying to, not even trying to have those things happen. It's like I'm not doing this to try and have this type of orgasm, because I think a lot of people get hooked on that. but it becomes possible when we let go of that and we feel what is actually really here, what's here.
And I speak to this quite often, but I just think it's really important. There's no age limit on that. Part of conscious sexuality is also understanding that this sexual energy comes from in, and it's not related to the external age or looks of your body. So if you're a woman like me who's past menopause and charging towards 60, this is still very much for you. This is still very much can be your time to grow and shine and teach others. I just think that's really important because, you know, part of that non-conscious sexuality is very much focused on how people look, what age people are. Well, this is not related to that. So you can keep shining and growing in this forever. There's no barriers to this just being part of your growth forever. And that's really exciting. And I think that's life extending too. Like, I know as a woman in my mid-50s, I just feel like I've got infinite time to just keep growing, keep enjoying life and feeling wonderful. So it's just really something important that not all genders, but particularly women know that there's no age limit on this. You can just keep going, keep growing.
Yeah, absolutely. And the amount of women that are in the older age group that have started doing this, like later on, like even if it's just for themselves, like then they're like, oh man, I wish I knew this sooner. This is amazing. So yeah, full power and encouragement for women to explore this. And also, you know, I've done tantra sessions for men in their 80s, you know, that are like who are just like, wow, like, yeah, it's great. Like, just don't let age, main thing is don't let age be a barrier to
exploring that sexuality. And life force energy, keep pumping it in, keep spreading it through your body. And you know, I feel so much more vibrant than I did 20 years ago. Like, I love my body more, I love my sexuality more. I bounce out of bed every morning full of energy, and that's really come as part of my becoming embodied and learning to sit in my body and really enjoy that. So, yeah, no age limit.
So what I love to do is share about the framework of a CSE session and to give people an idea, like this is what I was talking about before of like creating safety, is like having a framework and a structure creates safety. So one of the first things is the intention is really important. So every CSE has an intention. What are we here for? Who is this for? What does the person want to get out of it? These are all really important. There's important discussion to have. What is the intention? And in the past, I'd have clients that would be like, I'd be like, you know, what do you want to get out of this session? And mainly when I was just doing normal escorting, they'd be like, oh, just a bit of fun, just have a good time. And then it's really about getting deeper than that. Like, what does that mean for you? What does that look like for you? What does that feel? How do you want to feel? What would you like to receive? What would you like to give? You know, and with the CSE, what I would find is mostly they would be coming for some kind of healing, for some kind of learning, for some kind of growth. That would usually be the intention behind it. Often also they would come for like, they just wanted to see what it was like. What is this thing? I'm curious. Like, show me the way. Maybe I'll be led by you, priestess. So so that would also happen as well, just for curious people have heard about tantra and they're like, what's this tantra thing? I just want to experience and see what it's like. But yeah, often, particularly when they were, you know, perhaps had some sexual dysfunction, or you know, they wanted to become a better lover and learn how to pleasure their partner, like there was a real strong intention behind that. And you know, that's the first thing, is to get really clear what is the intention. And that's also going to help a practitioner know like where to take the session and what to offer and what to create here.
Yeah, totally. And I think just a very tiny point that's really relevant for that to happen. We can't have drugs, alcohol, or any substances involved, because you can't set an intention or sit in your body when there's substances affecting your thinking. So I just think that's a really important part of the safety piece to
Absolutely.
Remember that those kind of things are just, they're not part of a conscious experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I've had to turn clients away in the past where I could have, you know, been drinking and to say we can't do this. So we do recommend that our practitioners make sure that they let the clients know that this is, you know, drug and alcohol free experience, and that, you know, because some clients like to have a drink to calm their nerves beforehand. So it's recommending not to do that. And reminding our clients that nerves are actually a very similar sensation, or the same sensation as excitement. And just, you know, when we bring breath to it, then we can transform that those nerves into excitement, which it's
totally, because the alcohol they take to dull their nerves will also dull their experience, which is not something we want to do. And also it affects a really important next part of the thing is our boundaries and consent. And boundaries and consent need to be established with a very clear mind, which drugs and alcohol blur. So, you know,
yeah,
very important part of our container is establishing for both parties what their boundaries are. So setting the container of what the experience is going to look like.
Yeah, and that's what I was talking about earlier on this episode was this kink party that we went to. You know, there was alcohol there, and I was really questioning, how can you be giving boundaries and consent and being consent if that is involved? I'm really questioned that. And also, I really feel like embodied boundaries is important, and the embodied boundaries is not just like me saying to you, oh, these are my boundaries. I don't like, I'll just use an example. I don't want anything in my bum. I don't want you to put a tongue in my ear or like whatever it is, right? Whereas embodied boundaries is like, okay, let me actually go into my body and listen to my body and what actually feels like a yes and what feels like a no. And also being able to do that in the moment. Yeah. So if like, for example, when it comes to penetration, I'm going to, when it comes to receiving penetration, I'm going to tune in and I'm going to listen to my body and listen to my yoni and see, is this a yes? Am I getting a yes right now, or do I need something else? You know, is there something else that my body is desiring first before I can even get there? Or maybe it's just a complete no for this time. Yeah. So we have to really listen to that body rather than the mind that is like, okay, well, these are my, you know, these might be my hard boundaries that are always a no, and that's great. And you, what your body said yes to yesterday might actually be a no today. And so we have to be aware that bodies are about bodies. Oh my God. Boundaries need to be embodied, where we're really listening to ourselves. This is where the titration can come in as well, where we may just have to take, oh, I actually need to take a moment here. I need to pause, and I actually need to really get clear on what my body's saying. Because if we don't honor our body, that is when our body will contract and it will shut down. And we may go into a trauma response. We may start to get dysregulated, and we could create numbness. It could create some kind of tension in the body, or some kind of, you know, a deepening of shame. It's like, oh, you know, maybe I said yes to something and my body was saying no. And then I feel shame about that. Or I feel guilt about that, or whatever it is. And then, you know, we store that in our bodies. So this is why, like, making sure that our boundaries are embodied, and, you know, showing our clients also how to do that as well, like getting them to really feel into their bodies and what their body is saying yes to and what it's saying no to.
And sometimes that won't happen in a first session. When I say my experience, it may actually take 2 or 3 sessions with a customer to actually for them to understand what embodied consent actually looks like or feels like. It's completely foreign. As you know, I run some consent workshops, and where we just practice getting into your body and feeling yeses and nos. And at nearly every event, I will have more than half the people go, oh my God, I have never done that before. I've never noticed that there is actually a prickle that happens in my body when I want to say no and don't. So that's actually a skill that often people actually need to practice. And in your session with someone, you might not go any further than that for even a couple of sessions, because that's quite new, just learning to sink into your body and listen. Because it's a bloody superpower, but it's one of those many things that we've pushed down because culturally we have a really big emphasis on using your mind, thinking things through, busy, 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 busy mind, filling the gaps with a bit more busyness. So that art of sitting into your body, and once they've been going back to that spaciousness and time, is often something that you will actually spend a lot of time teaching someone, and it's worth putting the time into it. If that's all you achieve in a CSE session, that is absolutely a huge win for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely, because that, like you said, that concept is often so foreign. Like, so foreign to actually, oh, to take a moment to listen to my body and what my body's saying. Like, we're not taught that at school. We're not, well, I certainly wasn't. Maybe they do now. I don't know. Hopefully. But yeah, like to really listen. I notice that when I don't do that, I start to disconnect or disassociate, and noticing that, oh, I'm not fully present. I'm not really here. And that's when I might need to take a moment. And, or like, you know, sometimes I've had that happen, and I've just like just kind of gone with what's happening, when really that's actually not what my body is saying. So this is why these conversations around boundaries and consent are really important, and we teach a lot of this at CSE at our trainings, because it's just really important to keep coming to that. So we have a lot of different games and practices. We love boundary and consent games. And because the different games are going to help you land it in different ways and learn more and more. So, I mean, how many times I've played these games, and every time I'll learn something new. Every time I'll be like, oh, I noticed that now. Great, here's another layer. Here's a deepening. And also, I mean, there's still times that I can not fully speak my boundary. And it's a practice, right? It's like, oh, yeah, I noticed that I didn't to speak my boundary then, or like, okay, what happened in that moment? Why didn't I? And there's that curiosity and really listening. So when we talk about boundaries, some of the questions that I'll ask, you know, foundational questions that I've asked clients is, you know, is there anywhere they don't want to be touched? Is there any kind of touch that they don't want? Do they have any hard no's? Are there any levels to work towards, such as around genital touch? Like, for example, I personally will say to someone that I'm being intimate with, like, I want you to check in with me before you touch my yoni, or before you penetrate me. I want you to check in and ask me first before going straight there. So because I might not be ready yet to be touched. And if I am touched before I'm ready, I will contract. I'll be like, oh yeah. I had an ex-partner who would sometimes touch me and I'd feel all tickly there, and I'd be like, oh, like, and my body would be like, oh, like, I'm just like, I'm not ready. Like, and I, yeah. And we had to have this thing where like, I need to be, it's like, I'm the one that I need to ask for it. Like, that's the thing, I'll ask for it when I feel ready to be touched. So yeah, so that's one of the really big, big things. And other thing that I also like to speak to is like the fears and vulnerabilities that someone might have going into an experience. Yeah, and just speaking those out loud, you know, sharing that. And I'm actually, I've booked in next week, and I'm doing an episode on this to see a male escort. And yes, and I've actually emailed him with this framework, and I've spoken my intentions, my desires, my fears, my vulnerabilities, my boundaries. And one of the things that I've spoken to is my vulnerabilities or fears are that I might shut down and I might go into, I'm scared that I'll flip into performance instead of like really allowing myself to receive. And so by naming it, like I put it, you would bring it into the light and I get to be seen in that. And then the other person has awareness. Okay, here's what might be going on for that person. And also one of my vulnerabilities, I've made a request to really be seen in my softness and embodying what is the maiden energy and having him witness me in that. And that's a vulnerability for me. Being just fully witnessed by this man that I've not met in this super, soft, vulnerable energy. It's also my desire as well. It's the desire and the fear at the same time, because often the things we desire, we also fear. So I'm leaning into that edge of being seen in something that I desire to be seen in, but I'm also afraid of. So that's something else. And then one of the other things is like around communication, establishing how to communicate. So, how will the person communicate their desires and needs? So how will they communicate what they want? How will they communicate their boundaries? Is there a safe word or a phrase to use? And how can we check in with them as well? Like when we might noticing that they're getting a bit dysregulated, we might check in with them and see how they're going and if they need anything. It's like talking about, establishing the way we're going to communicate. So if I go back to this experience with this male escort, I've said to him that the way that I'll communicate what I want is that I will say, I would love blank. I would love you to blank. I would love you this now. I'll ask for that. If I'm feeling starting to feel overwhelmed or it's getting too much or I need to slow down, I'll say things like slow down. I'll ask for something different. I'll ask for a pause. I'll say the word pause. These kind of things, establishing that. And also, we speak to sometimes if someone's gone into a freeze response, they might not even have the capacity to communicate. So they might not be able to use their words. So that might be when we can, maybe have some kind of hand signal or something. It can be other ways to be able to communicate. And sometimes if we do check in with them and they don't respond, that's going to be a sign, that they are in a freeze response. And then there's ways of working with that and getting them regulated and back into safety, which is all
And
the
I
things we teach at CSE.
know, and I noticed too that it's very possible, very, very possible for clients to go into that performance and people pleasing response as well. So that's also something I always find it's actually helpful to speak to them about that particular response, because that people pleasing and performance responses are, some people have never ever heard of that. And that's quite a surprise to people that that can actually be a response to trauma. So once again, that too is something that we speak a lot about in CSE, but I always find that just educating clients about that particular response, because men are quite huge on going into a performance response. They're very conditioned on that one. So actually speaking to them, this is a safe space to put that away, completely away. Is usually a really good addition to the experience, and such a relief for them. What, I don't have to perform at all. There's no expectation. Yep, that's how it looks. Is such a relief. But keeping in mind, a lot of those responses are unconscious. So sometimes it's really important to speak of them. That performance or people pleasing can actually be trauma responses. And it's really good to speak into them at the start of the session so that there's awareness.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, for those that resonate to that around the performance and the pleasing, I would go back and listen to the episode on a sexual fawning. And yeah, really listen to that. And because that's going to support you to get some deeper understanding around that. So where I've seen this a lot is when there's a lot of vulnerability around receiving. And what that can bring up, it can bring up shame and guilt, and that is not okay to be felt. That's the conditioning that person might have, and then so it's easy to go into, oh, I'm just gonna please this person so I don't have to feel these uncomfortable sensations in my body, and I'm just gonna disconnect so that I can focus on the other person. But it's not even done consciously. It's like not even having that level of awareness to even, that's not the thought that's happening. It's not until we get really connected to our bodies that we're like, oh, now I actually see that this is what I'm doing. What is it that I'm feeling? Like when I have the thought, okay, I'm just gonna go and now please this person, what is actually happening in my body in that moment? Listening to that. Yeah. So when I've worked with a lot of men who are just coming fully to receive, and they start to reach out to me, they start to want to touch me, they start to, it's like bringing it back to them and bringing it back to their own bodies and what they're feeling. Yeah. So that they can be with those things and not take themselves out. Yeah. Because they're starting to go outside of their own bodies into another person. Yeah. Because there's more comfort in that. So, another thing that, and this is often used mostly in kink, but I do think it for any sexual experience, I think it's important to have a safe word or a safe phrase. So, Anna, do you want to speak to the traffic light system? And I know that you're very versed in this and
Yes, totally. Well, look, in the kink community, we run by a traffic light system. It's very basic. Red means stop. Orange means a few people interpret orange differently, but most of the time it's an awareness or a pause or a discussion. So if it's me, an orange will mean let's just stop and have a little break, talk about what's going on. And green means everything's good and we can keep going. So during the course of a session, you can just check in. During the course of the session, and just check in, and you need to check in to get the greens as well, so that you know whatever is happening is the other person's feeling really safe. Some people, if it's a very tantric or flowy based session, actually don't like the traffic light system because they perceive it's to do with kink. And some people are uncomfortable with that concept, although I do my best to educate them about the beauty of that. But nevertheless, you can change those three words to anything that feels comfortable or in flow with what you're doing. But so essentially, as long as you have an agreement of a range of words whereby you can just assess the experience, assess that everything's going well, and also know the difference between stop, we're done, I don't want to continue at all, or I don't want to do that, but this is the time for a discussion or a check-in. And okay, so that's the difference. And it's really good to gently whisper to your customer, where am I at? So just to get that green. What's also really important about that is every time you ask, you're asking them to go back to their body. So just bringing them back to that traffic light system is asking them to just go back to their body, to get there in their bodies, and also makes you able to assess that they haven't gone into a freeze response because they're still able to communicate with you. So all of those things are really, really important through the duration of any kind of session, just to keep our flow going, to keep everything going as it should. And sometimes an orange is fantastic because that opportunity to stop, discuss, assess, and make a conscious decision. Actually, that's feeling like a bit of an orange, but maybe I want to approach that edge. Maybe I want to keep going, but I want to do so with caution. It's a really exciting exploration for people. So it's actually really good that they can stop and verbalize that rather than just sitting in, I'm not sure. I don't know what that means. So I really celebrate those oranges because they're orange is where the growth is. Orange is where we're actually looking at an edge and thinking about, okay, do I want to go a little bit further? What will that mean for me? Am I ready for that yet? Maybe I'll just stay in it for a little bit longer and then come back to green. It's also fantastic for if you then have an experience with that person in the future, that system actually gives you a framework to their psyche. It actually gives you a framework of how they work, where their oranges were and where their reds were. That will change over time, but it also gives you a kind of roadmap to how that person works, which is really helpful, particularly if you're facilitating growth for them.
Yeah, and at our training we actually play a fun game called the traffic light game where we get to, it doesn't have to be all serious, you know, it gets to be fun and we get to explore what our greens are and what our oranges are and how to meet those edges and how to be received and honored in our boundaries essentially and what that's like. And that game is so great. I used to play this with clients so that they then had that languaging in our sessions together. And then they could take it into their own personal life as well. So, again, with my ex-partner, we would use these in our intimacy all the time, all the different colors, you know, to be able to say that's an orange or like, that's, you know, green, keep going. It's great. So, or that's a green, you know, so, you know, it can be used in so many ways and it can be done really playfully. It doesn't have to be all, you know, very serious. It can be done with a lot of fun and play and expression, you know, like we encourage people to really bring fun to their green. Like when they're really feeling the green, they're like, oh yeah, that's a green. It's a green, green. Like stuff like that. We can be very expressive with it. Yeah. So.
One of the joys of CSE training, I do have to say, is Miss EJ Love is the queen of games and the queen of playlists. And they are a really fun part of the training. We do lots of laughing, lots of games, and lots of shit hot music, which is fantastic to be around.
Yes, I do love my games and I do love my music. And I was just writing an email this morning and I was saying to someone, yeah, people tell me all the time that they have sex to my playlists. So, and I
Oh, hell
feel
yeah.
I'm like, I love that. I love it when someone, and sometimes I've never met this person and they'll be like, oh my God, yeah, last night I had sex to your, you know, tantric playlists with my partner. It was so amazing. I was like, yay, that's so exciting to think that people are having sex to this music. So, and I'll create new playlists for myself, for my own embodiment and for my own sexual exploration. And then suddenly there'll be all these likes and follows, and I'm like, great, I love that people are listening to this on Spotify. So for those of you listening that want some really epic playlists, go to find me on Spotify under EJ Love and you'll be able to see all my different playlists and you'll see we have got CSE playlists for things that we explore at CSE. So yeah, have fun with those. And yeah, send me a message on Instagram and let me know that you've had sex to my playlists. Yeah, I love it. I love it. I've created this playlist for this male escort experience that I'm having next week. I'm like, and I was like, oh, I've created a playlist.
Go you.
Yeah. So music's so important. I feel like having the right music is so essential. And for me, it really helps me get me into my body. Yeah. Yeah. So really, really important. So that's another thing to think about in your conscious sexuality experience is what music you're going to play as well. And then also what's really important is aftercare. So again, they talk about this a lot in kink and aftercare, but do we do aftercare for just intimate experiences? Like often people don't, and I personally love it and think it's so important. So I'll let you speak to that one, Anna.
Well, I think after any journey, you need to come back to safety. You need to come back to, especially if we've traveled outside a comfort zone or traveled outside an edge, we need to come back. We need to come back to safety. There needs to be an opportunity to discuss the experience. So a real, an opportunity to talk about, how did that feel for you? Where did you feel that in your body? Do you feel that your desires were met? Those kind of things are really, really important. Another really important part of aftercare is just making sure that you're sending the person out of the session in a really embodied, grounded, safe manner. So, as part of the aftercare, I would always do a practice to make sure the person is completely in their body. So, just checking in with their senses, checking in what they can hear, checking in, what they can see, just making sure they're leaving in a really grounded, good space. It's always good to check in that they're going home to some sort of support network. If something comes up tomorrow, that they've got someone to talk to. If you feel in the, case where someone has come up with some significant trauma, you would also make sure as part of your aftercare that they're leaving with some phone numbers, or maybe you need to refer them to a therapist or that kind of thing. So making sure someone has those, access to extra resources when they leave is really, really important part of not just your duty of care, but also part of the aftercare that you need to provide someone. It's also good to leave them with some somatic practices they can do at home. If suddenly they feel a little bit, dysregulated, make sure they know how to bring themselves back to base. Because particularly if this is a first for them, you will have jiggled up some new emotions that they're going to be dealing with over the next days, weeks, months. So just making sure that they know that that's normal, giving them resources to deal with that. And then just making sure you end the session on a really lovely, caring way. A lot of the time, I actually ask people at the start what they like for aftercare. So, some people like to sit there and eat strawberries, or they might want to have a cup of tea, or they might want to just have a chat and hold their hand. So, really getting a feel for what it is that means something to them can really just complete a really beautiful experience.
Yeah, I love all of that. And one of the things that I've always loved to do, and it doesn't always have to be straight away, but it could be something if you're working with the client to reflect on, to have them reflect on. But often I do this with a partner where maybe straight away, or it might be the next day or the next couple of days, is just reflecting on what did you love about that? What do you love about that experience? Like, what really turned you on? How did that make you feel? Yeah. And just reflecting on being able to share that with the other person, especially if you are in an intimate relationship with a lover or partner, being able to reflect on that experience. What challenged you, if anything? What was vulnerable? Maybe there are things, unexpected things that came up that were vulnerable, that were challenging. Maybe there was, I noticed in this moment I shut down, or I didn't speak up for what I wanted. It felt really vulnerable. I wanted to ask for this thing, and then it felt really vulnerable, and I couldn't say it. And then getting to explore that. Oh, okay, great. Why that might be, and how can we do things differently next time? What would support you to be able to open up that? Was there more safety that needed to be there? Like all these kind of pieces to reflect on. Another question is, was there anything that you wanted more of? Maybe there was something you were like, oh my God, that's so good. More, please. Maybe you didn't ask for that in the moment. Maybe you thought, oh no, this is too much. This is too much for me to be receiving all of this. So I'm not going to ask for more. Yeah. Or maybe that the other person is tired. They don't want to give that. It's like really looking at, like, what did you want more of? Was there something that stopped you from asking more of that, et cetera? And then another question is, what did you desire that you didn't get? Maybe there was something that you really desired and that you didn't ask for, or you didn't think that you could ask for. And how would that make you feel if you actually could ask for that and or did have that desire met? How would that make you feel? And then from that place, we get to look at how can we implement these things next time? Or if we're working with the client, how can we work on these things that perhaps came up? Yeah. And then you can develop also your sessions from that place as well. Yeah. So you're taking the lessons and you're looking at how can we work with this. So I think it's really important to reflect on the experience and have some inquiry questions that support that reflection, whether you do that with that person or you get them to reflect on it themselves. But I do think it is helpful to do it with someone, because then you can kind of hash things out a little bit more and you can both share and reflect together.
I think as a practitioner too, it's important that you give yourself aftercare as well. And that may not be appropriate within the session, but after a session, it's really important to debrief with yourself, to just reflect on what you felt, to give yourself some self-care. So something that has meaning and is special to you, and for you to take the time to either journal or write down or just think about your feelings of what happened in the session, what you enjoyed, what was important to you, because that's also really important, because your self-care and your aftercare are also really, really important. That'd be different if you are with a lover or a companion. You can do that together, and that's a really beautiful thing. But if you're as a practitioner, that's probably something that you want to honour yourself with afterwards, with some yummy special self-care and just reflection. And or if there's been something uncomfortable, for example, if the customer had a trauma response that you felt a little unsettling, it's really important that you debrief with someone around that as well, and really look after yourself.
Yeah, I feel that's really, really important, because we can only really bring our fullness to our sessions if we're also taking care of ourselves. And I really like this idea of giving from our overflow. So we're not even depleting our cup, we're giving from our overflow. So taking care of ourselves is really important. And I've seen a lot of people that work in these fields overgive and overly caretake. And it's important that we do look after ourselves, because we will burn out. We will get energetically depleted, and then it will feel exhausting rather than nourishing. I know, I used to do so many sessions, and I realized that I could actually only really do 1 to 2 sessions a day, and that was good for my energy. That's what I could manage. And I just realized that I had to charge more and to be able to honor that time and energy that actually goes into something like this, and really value that. So we've talked a lot about, you know, the frameworks and the safety and the boundaries and consent. And what I think is important to touch on is, what actually do we do in a session? Like, other than that, because I mean, you could you could literally do whole sessions on boundaries and consent, like practicing totally. Boundaries and consent easily, right? You could do a series of sessions, because that's going to be so powerful. Like, that would change someone's sex life completely, revolutionize it, just learning that. And there's a lot more that we can explore and experience as well. So I would love to speak to really like the things, some of the things that we do actually do in CSE in our trainings, that we teach the woman to be able to offer. And one of the things that we do is embodiment dance, and or in Australia, dance, where we women are embodying these different archetypes. They're embodying the priestess, the dominatrix, the queen, the mother, seductress, the playful brat, and they're tapping into these energies that they can actually bring into the sessions, because it's not just about coming in and like, right now I'm just going to give to you. It's like, what are you actually embodying? Yeah, so it's embodying these different archetypes that then offer a transmission to the person that you're with, and their transmission can actually activate that person and open them up. They can feel it in their bodies, yeah, with just by witnessing. And it's so incredibly powerful to see that. And we have an archetype temple evening where we do have men that will witness women in archetypes. And the response that we hear from these men is incredible, like just how powerful it is for them to experience witnessing a woman embodied in these archetypes. And often one of the things I would do is, if I was doing a tantric lingam worship ritual, is I would dance often in my priestess or in my seductress. And that would help open the men to feel reverence, to feel honor, to feel and experience the power of the goddess, and to also help activate and open their sexual energy. And I'm not even doing anything to them. It's just that their presence and their feeling, the embodiment of that, opens them up in a way that they haven't experienced, but they're also longing for, because a lot of men are longing for this feminine energy and to experience that and to feel that helps them also experience and activate more of their own masculine and polarity to that.
And I think that longing for the feminine is such an important piece because we've touched on before the patriarchal society we live in has taken out a lot of that connection with the feminine. So a lot of the practices we do in CSE are actually creating spaces where men can reconnect with the feminine, which, as you correctly pointed out, they deeply yearn for. One of the other things we do, we also allow a space for women to connect with their dark feminine. So there's a whole piece that we could take up a whole recording on about how we have so many ideas that dark is bad, but dark is just so beautiful. Dark's like where soil, where trees come out of soil, or new stars are built out of, constellations. So we teach women to access that dark feminine. Men are very attracted to that, and we teach them some of the arts around using even some light dominatrix, or what we would call dark healing, in their services, which is really activating for bodies. It's really activating for women because it really connects them with a really beautiful, grounded feminine energy. And it's very transformative for men. And same, we can create a whole CSE service where you would not necessarily need to touch someone, or you can incorporate some embodied practices around that, using some things that I guess we would traditionally call kinky, but not necessarily so. A lot of the skills can be sensual or around touch or around what it feels to want to do something and gently push against that, but not quite do it. How it feels to want something, but not to be allowed to have it in that space of time. So that's another essential thing that we teach within the CSE. That is life-changing for women and also very life-changing for the men that receive that energy.
Yeah, one of the things that I'm really big on is that teaching men how to welcome these energies into themselves as well, rather than, completely outsourcing their sense of pleasure and validation and love to a woman, because that's really important. We don't want someone relying on that from a woman or a practitioner. It's like also. So teaching men how to really get connected to their own bodies and their own source of pleasure, their own source of intimacy, like really cultivating that in themselves, and knowing that these energies, like they live inside of themselves as well, that they can get connected to their own source of love, intimacy, pleasure, and connection. And also, what we will do is we will do more podcast episodes specifically on a lot of the things that we cover on CSE. So, for example, we do have the Tantric Lingam Worship Ritual. We have done, or oh, I've done an episode on that already, The Art of Tantric Cock Worship, which I highly recommend to go listen to that if you haven't already. And also, I wanted to mention adding to what you said, Anna, about stuff not. There can be stuff that's done without touch. Like you can even do Zoom sessions, right? You can do online CSE sessions. And I'm even been talking to this man who lives quite far away from me, so I can't see him in person. And I said to him, would you be open doing something over Zoom? Like, and I'm looking at exploring him witnessing me and some of the energies that are a bit more vulnerable for me, because I want to explore and open, crack more of myself open to be witnessed and feel safety, deep in safety, and being witnessed outside of a practitioner space, and more own personal witnessing, and then exploring more domination and submission dynamics over a Zoom is totally possible. And I think that's quite exciting, actually.
Well, I do. I still have quite a few BDSM customers that are in LA, so we are able to definitely do that over Zoom. And that's also a really exciting thing that I guess we empower women in CSE to actually own that much power within themselves that they can project it over a Zoom session, that they are sitting on so much beautiful power that they've accessed inside themselves that that easy permeates out to Zoom, to whatever. And that's exciting for both parties. That's exciting for the women to find that power inside them because that is life-changing. It's also very exciting for customers on Zoom who often approach a Zoom session thinking it's going to be like the second best B-grade option and are nearly always blown away with how much can actually happen over a Zoom screen.
Yeah. And so we actually spoke about conscious domination on another podcast episode. So yeah, I would recommend to listen to that as well. We're going to do a part two because we talked about the somatic healing that can happen through kink, and we have a part two that's going to come out. So again, this is stuff that we teach at our training. Another thing that we teach is the intimate touch ritual, which is really a session I developed around the wheel of consent. That supports men to, or people to give and receive touch within boundaries and consent, and really to bring a man's awareness to his own relationship to giving and receiving. And also incorporating tantric practices like eye gazing and the yab yum position, and these things that can be incorporated into different sessions that bring more presence, bring more embodiment, bring more awareness, and bring deeper levels of connection, which I think is really such a core part of the CSE, is connection.
Yeah. And I do have to say that the connection within the people who did our last CSE is also quite profound.
Oh
That not
yeah.
only are we teaching practices that people can learn to connect more, both professionally or in their personal life, but we also created a container of a very deep connection that is extended well outside that particular container.
Yeah, I'm loving seeing the woman just feel so supported, and the collaboration and the things that have been created, like there's temple nights that are being run, and there's, people doing the offering this work for the first time and having profound experiences. And it's just quite, and it just, when if they've got clients that are like, I've got this client that's come to me with this. What do you recommend? Like the women are getting to share with each other from their own experience and learnings. And it's just such a wealth of wisdom within this container. And the level of support is amazing. And, we all have our vulnerabilities as well and our humors. And like, so it's all welcomed. And I love that. It's not competition, it's collaboration and community. And I just love that we've created this within the trainings that we're offering. So another couple of other things, and I really feel like that the best thing is going to be to do other podcast episodes to go deeper into this. So we've got things like you can offer a pleasure prostate ritual, which is deeply healing for a man to be able to receive this. We've got sexual healing journeys where men, if they're struggling with dysfunctions, there's different practices and ways to work with these dysfunctions. I'm definitely going to do an episode on this because this is probably for some of the biggest work that I've taught, and I think it definitely needs its own episode or three, because I could probably go into each different dysfunction and go deep into that. So if you're curious about that, let me know. Send me a message on Instagram. I'd love to hear also what is it that you would love us to share more about, perhaps your own struggles. One of the things I do want to mention before we do complete this is the importance of women who are doing this work, of actually healing their relationship with the masculine, with men, and loving and understanding them. And because if we don't, we will bring our wounding into our work. And I can see the difference between when I used to offer sessions before I did this work and after. It's like I was not devotional because I couldn't be, because there was all this stuff in the way. There was all this resentment. There was all this anger. There was all this stuff in the way that I couldn't fully be devotional to men. I didn't see, I saw them through different eyes than I've come to see them. And even now, like, I mean, I've been through a really big breakup, and where I was hurt, deeply hurt, and I was wounded, and I'm very conscious of not going into the part of me that wants to really like make him wrong and blame and hate and da da da. Yes, that stuff has come up, but I've been conscious enough to work through that and to be able to drop into compassion with boundaries. Really important to have compassion, because I think sometimes we can also be too compassionate, especially if we have a fawning response, trauma response. We can go into too much compassion. It's definitely something I've had to journey with as well. So it's being able to move into being actually in our hearts and giving to men from our hearts. And when we have stories and wounds and beliefs around men that aren't very healthy and do come from our wounding, it is hard to really give that. Yeah. And if anything, I think the work that I have done in holding space for men has helped me to love them more, because I have been able to hold space that has opened them up to be really vulnerable. Yeah. So I think that's, and to the point that it's an honor, became it's, an honor to be able to have a man really open up and feel safe to share himself in that way.
And I think the extension of that is if you're holding on to some resentment around the masculine, but you're working in service to the masculine. It's very hard to fully love yourself because that resentment to I'm working every day around men and I have some feelings around them, they also come back to dislike of yourself with actually doing that kind of work. So really important. And we do, and EJ's a master of this. We do a lot of work on healing those feelings that, working through those woundings and those feelings that we feel about men. I believe most of us have a story of being deeply hurt. So we kind of bring that out on the table and we work through it and we move through it and we get it out of the way so that we can really sit in our love, first of all, of ourselves. And then that can overflow into the joy that we get from working with men.
Yes, absolutely. Ah, yeah, we do have some cool processes and things that we do with this, and then we bring men into the space, and it's just so beautiful. Oh my God, it's always my favorite part when men come in and we guide them into some practices, and the way that men and women connect and they get to see each other through these eyes of love is just like, oh my God, I just want this to ripple effect out into the world, to really see each other and love each other. And just the amount of love that's always in these spaces. I've run these rituals between men and women many, many, many times, and oh, there's just it's just quite profound and deep, the love and connection that is in these spaces. And I just think, if we all got to experience that, what an amazing world we would live in. So that is what then these practitioners then get to take out and bring into their one-on-one sessions with men, or even working with couples. They can also guide a couple into these practices together as well, which is also very beautiful. So I think we're going to complete here. This has been a very long episode, but much needed. And look, we'll keep talking about the conscious, what's in a conscious sexuality experience through the different episodes for all the things you can experience, because it just definitely cannot be answered on one episode. But I hope that gives you a really great foundation of the a CSE experience, and some ideas and insights. And again, if you are feeling called to learn this for yourself, either professionally or personally, please go to our website. I'll put it on the show notes. Go to consciousexualityexperience.com, and we also are having a mixed gender one coming out as well, which will have a lot of different things in it that is different to the practitioner training as well, because we will have men also learning about women's pleasure and women's bodies and how to worship the goddess, the goddesses that we are. If you can't see, Anna's doing like a happy dance right now, a sexy dance. Yeah. So there'll be the honoring of the feminine as well, which will be really, really powerful. So excited for that. And we are finding that we are selling out quite quickly, which is really exciting. We're always selling out in advance. So yeah, definitely recommend to get onto if you are feeling the call to get onto things quickly. So it is just super exciting. This has actually been like, honestly, I've done a lot of things in my life. I've, done a lot of different trainings, and this seems to just have such a beautiful flow, and people are hungry. Like, people were wanting this work, and really is revolutionary, and we are changing the world here. So come be part of it if you're feeling that call.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Deep Sexy Play. If you're ready to get sexy, then I have a playbook full of intimate questions, sexy games, and deep connection practices, which you can get at deepsexyplay.com. If this episode stimulated your mind, I invite you to like and follow the podcast. And if you're feeling extra sexy or got something out of this episode, then I would love to receive and read your review. To connect with me and my listeners, you're welcome to join my free, private, Deep Sexy Play Facebook group. You can also follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at EJLoveOfficial, where you'll also find my latest offerings and ways to work with me. All these links are in the show notes. I hope you'll be back for more Deep Sexy Play.